Hi, everyone. I hope you are having a good Black History Month. For February, I want to combine my love of people who wear capes, both vampires and superheroes, and talk about the themes and history of the Blade trilogy. I recommend you watch the first two films before proceeding, unless you have no interest in these movies and just want to hear me talk, in which case I'm very flattered. Blade, released in 1998, was based on the Marvel Comics character of the same name and first appeared in 1973's Tomb of Dracula. He was created by writer Marv Wolfman, who based his design on people that Wolfman saw in the city around him and so wanted his comics to reflect that diversity. Apparently, when adapting this character for film, the studio wanted Blade to be white, but the filmmakers had to fight to keep his identity. Wesley Snipes was also a big part of bringing Blade to screen, acting as a producer on the film and adding details from his own life as well as his martial arts skills to the character. When it first came out, Blade grossed $131 million worldwide. It gained an immediate cult following and was given two sequels. It restored audience faith in comic book movies after the poor reception of Batman and Robin in 1997. Its success also acted as proof of concept for the fledgling Marvel Studios to make their own films with their own characters instead of licensing them out. Without Blade, you don't get an MCU. Now, this is very subjective. I could just be in the wrong online spaces, but it feels like Blade has been forgotten about. Despite the fact that he's responsible for paving the way for the superhero-dominated film landscape of today. As an enjoyer of superhero media and a lover of all things vampire, I feel like both general fandoms don't really talk about this character very much. On the one hand, it could be that Blade feels more like another genre, with the techno soundtrack and Y2K raves and black pleather and martial arts and cyber goth aesthetic. It seems like some alt kids on TikTok should be making Blade core into a trend. And that all makes it seem more like sci-fi, like the Matrix trilogy, which came out around the same time. And a lot of people who like vampire media enjoy it for the gothic capital and lowercase r romanticism, so maybe that was a turnoff. I think it might have been memory hold by superhero fans because it grew out of the world of 1970s horror comics, which have not been revisited by the general public until very recently. Maybe it's because these days a lot of horror movie fans dislike superhero movies for being generic and safe and omnipresent, while many superhero fans in turn want superheroes to be far away from the horror genre, idealistic and colorful. Maybe that's part of why Phase 4 was unpopular. I can understand both of these disparate reactions when presented with the relentless chaos and societal collapse around us, along with the homogenization of film and TV into bland, consolidated corporate content. I will be surprised if the new Disney-created Blade film is as nasty and violent as gross as the first trilogy was allowed to be, and I think that is a shame. This amnesia is also a shame because Blade 1 and 2 are just really solid movies. They are inventive and kinetic, and the action is super stylized, but also feels visceral and raw, which seems like something that was touted as groundbreaking when Daredevil did it almost 20 years later. In discussions of the MCU, the exclusion of Blade from the current narrative around the progression of superheroes in popular culture feels like a form of erasure. During the lead-up to Black Panther, talk of him being the first on-screen Black superhero was everywhere. It didn't bother me at the time because I legitimately didn't know that Blade was a superhero based on Marvel Comics. Now, I am the first to admit that I don't have an especially deep knowledge of comics, but I was in online fandom spaces with people who did, and I didn't hear anyone talking about Blade at that point in time. Fast forward to now, and this distinction rubs me the wrong way, unless people are just talking about the MCU specifically. It feels like people were saying that a Black superhero had to come from 2018 because it was just too much for the bad old days when no one was socially conscious. That doesn't explain the strange way that movies seem to actually get whiter or at least less Black during the beginning of the 21st century. It also bothers me that the mostly white X-Men films, whose central metaphor I've always disliked, get the credit for saving superhero movies. That belongs to Blade, which uses its speculative fiction elements as a metaphor for racial issues, but backs it up with an actually diverse cast. So I've made the case that Blade is underappreciated as a piece of superhero media, but what about as a piece of vampire media? What makes this a vampire story? Tales of malignant beings that return from liminal spaces between life and death to attack the living have been with us since the dawn of civilization. but the word vampire is a Slavic one and refers to the undead creatures of Eastern European folklore. They became known in the West due to vampire panics in the 1700s, when Habsburg officials attempted to explain this phenomenon plaguing their newly conquered Slavic territories. These revenants were said to come from and prey on the peasantry and are bloated, leech-like entities. At a time when science could do little to assuage people's deepest fears, vampires served as a way to explain mysterious diseases and deaths in the family. Their characteristics are believed to come from people's reaction to seeing rotting corpses whose frighteningly lifelike appearances could be byproducts of decomposition. At their unbeating hearts, vampires embody fears of death, disease, and decay. But these vampires of legend were very different from the suave, caped aristocrats we usually picture. For those, we look to Gothic literature of the 19th century. The first vampire characters were introduced by John Polidori in 1819's The Vampire and Sheridan Le Fanu in 1875's Carmilla. These vampires, unlike their folkloric counterparts, were alluring and had recognizably human personalities. And in those texts, the vampires themselves are the focus. As a vampire hunter, Blade can trace his literary heritage to the late 1890s. This is when Irish writer Bram Stoker brought together traditional Romanian folklore and the anxieties of the fin de siècle British public. If you haven't read the novel Dracula, I would highly recommend it. Despite its massive influence, it has been somewhat eclipsed by its adaptations. It's also been obscured by roughly a century of bad, hypersexualized interpretations that assume that anything written in the time period must by default be misogynistic, regardless of the actual text, ignore the 19th century context, and reek of get-liberated man and Freudianism. But Dracula is more than a sexy sex story about sexy, illicit Victorian sex. It's about many of the tensions and contradictions of living in a world that is moving forward at an ever-advancing rate while being haunted by the past. Dracula is a figure of history and superstition, an aristocrat from Transylvania who comes to try and dominate urban, industrialized Britain at the height of the empire. Blade was made 100 years later, and its heroin chic, sexually predatory vampires evoke the decade's fears of addiction and STDs. Dr. Karen Jensen, a version of the Van Helsing archetype, calls vampirism a sexually transmitted disease. In the 1890s, the disease of vampirism is treated initially as a scientific problem, the way it was in the 1700s. But it is religion, specifically Christianity, and folklore, which provides the tools to battle against Dracula. By the end of the 20th century, religion has lost its power. Blade explicitly says that religious symbols have no effect on the undead, and the threat is defeated through scientific means alone. But just because science triumphs, Blade warns its hip viewers to be cautious in facing the new millennium. Its LA is the epitome of a modern city, but that modernity doesn't stop it being vulnerable to the supernatural. This warning came in a moment when many were beginning to view America as an empire that was headed for decline. In Blade, unlike Dracula, the evil isn't waiting to invade. It's already here. Dracula's imperial anxiety has long-lasting implications for how modern vampires do or do not talk about race. As I mentioned earlier, vampires are Slavic in origin, and their geographical habitat, the Caucasus region, is also the gateway to or from Asia, depending on your perspective. Dracula has been read as a part of the reverse invasion genre, a recurring narrative where colonial Britain asked itself, what if someone does to us what we've done to the rest of the world? In this reading, Dracula is an Easterner coming to challenge Britain, represented by Jonathan Mina and Co., Western Europe, represented by Dr. Van Helsing, and the United States, represented by Wild West adventurer Quincy B. Morris. Side note, Dracula does in fact have a vampire-hunting cowboy in it. See why I said it was worth a read? But while Dracula is the progenitor of most modern vampires, his descendants have lost their accents and their ethnic ambiguity. The complicated issue of how people from Eastern Europe are classified within ethnic and racial hierarchies is ignored. I'm glad modern vampires are not being used as metaphors for immigrants as invaders, but I don't think it's a coincidence that as they became more sympathetic, they lost their association with people who were seen as either not white or the wrong kind of white. But in their time on screen, vampires started out as Eastern European, and then in the 21st century, a generic white bread Americanness became the norm. This overwhelming whiteness of the movie Vampire is more insidious because it is treated like it doesn't exist. The worst permutations of this unwillingness to engage with issues of race came during the height of the late 2000s, early 2010s vampire craze, which brought us all the terrible racial subtext in Twilight, where sophisticated, wealthy, Volvo-driving vampires are contrasted with blue-collar, indigenous werewolves who are literally portrayed as animals who can't control their emotions. When director Catherine Hardwicke tried to change any of her khaki-loving vampires into people of color for the films, author Stephenie Meyer pushed back, insisting that they had to be white. This kind of blind insistence on the whiteness of vampires had them being made into literal white supremacists at the same time they were at their most sympathetic. This era saw a positive epidemic of romanticized, unrepentant Confederate vampires in True Blood, The Vampire Diaries, and also Twilight. Now, there's nothing wrong with making vampires racist or using vampires as metaphors for whiteness. For instance, Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter is one of the few Hollywood films brave enough to portray the Confederacy as monstrous, but it wasn't nearly as popular as the other examples I mentioned. So, given this racial context, you can see why I found the Blade film so refreshing. While the vampires in Blade are not all white, as a group they represent a white power structure. The war of humans against vampires is a form of urban violence that is the fault of the ultra-wealthy and powerful vampires, but takes the greatest toll on the poor, the homeless, and people in underserved communities. The elite vampires are politically connected. They all wear suits, meet in shadowy boardrooms, have noble houses, and are obsessed with hierarchies based on blood. The only heroic white person we meet is Whistler, whose long hair, disheveled appearance, and the fact that he's played by Kris Kristofferson, who's associated with 60s counterculture, visually code him as someone on the fringes of respectable white society. The second film adds explicitly fascist imagery to the vampires' architecture and some of their uniforms. When the character Reinhardt meets Blade, the first thing he says is, "Do you blush?" A clear piece of racial provocation inspired by something a real neo-Nazi said to Wesley Snipes. Apparently, most audiences didn't get that the character was supposed to be a white supremacist, as was very explicit in the original script. This is an example of the way in which the Blade films will reference racial issues without spelling things out for the audience. And that means that sometimes the general public will miss the discussion happening. For instance, most superheroes have reasons for not going to the police, and Blade does not explicitly say that his are racial, but his simultaneous resignation and disbelief after being shot at by the cops while trying to help Karen makes this clear. In the Blade universe, law enforcement doesn't just have a few bad guys that happen to be abusing their power, the bad guys own them. They are quick to see a black man as a threat, because they are there to serve and protect the blood-drinking monsters. Basically, all cops are vamps. It will be interesting to see if the MCU version of Blade will be so openly hostile to police. So far, these films have tried to avoid delving into questions about the ethics of vigilantism. When they do criticize law enforcement, it's often tempered by focusing on fictional agencies like the Department of Damage Control. That's not to say that the Blade films are totally coherent in their messaging. While I personally appreciate Blade's discussion of race via the metaphor of vampirism, I wouldn't say it works all the time. While white writers are capable of writing stories about black characters, a story that is so centered around racial issues should have had more input from black creatives behind the camera. There is a great deal of loaded symbolism to Blade's origin. He is part vampire and part human, part oppressor and part oppressed. He is even referred to as a half-breed. His mother, a black woman, was attacked by a white male vampire. Blade's biological father is never mentioned, but he has a white adoptive father in Whistler, and Deacon Frost, his mother's assailant, also refers to himself as Blade's father. How Vanessa, Blade's mother, feels about her assault and about losing her son is never explored. When we meet her again, she has become a full vampire, totally loyal to Deacon. I think that for a plot dealing with violence against black women, this film should have put a lot more thought into this character because her siding with her abuser against her son feels dangerously close to victim blaming. There is another aspect of these films that I noticed but don't know how best to interpret. Blade is extremely socially isolated compared to other superheroes, even in the time before crossovers. Blade's only consistent emotional connection is with his surrogate father, Whistler, who voices concern about how alone Blade is before his death. Any team he works with is destroyed by the end of the films, and the last movie ends with narration about how Blade's fight means he will always be on his own. Which isn't necessarily the wrong ending, but it doesn't seem like the one the film was building towards. If you've been wondering why I keep leaving the third Blade film out of this discussion, it's because it's not very good. It's also in contrast to how most other superhero films extol the virtue of working together as a team or finding a way to balance your superhero and personal life. As for that personal life, Blade has no explicit romantic interest in any film. Guillermo del Toro shares my view that most genres could use more romance. So in the second film, he heavily implies that Blade and the vampire princess Nyssa have feelings for each other, and apparently there was a sex scene, but that was cut. I bring this up because so many other superhero films of the time have prominent romance plots, like the Fantastic Four duology and the Raimi Spider-Man trilogy. Even equally macho loner Wolverine has a string of women he gets with so that he can be sad when they get shoved in the fridge. Is Blade's lack of a love life a case of the white men behind the camera not seeing a dark-skinned black man as a romantic lead? Or is it because his films are hard R quasi-horror movies and the creators thought that any mushy stuff would alienate the presumed young male audience? I'm not saying every superhero has to have a love interest, but it's good for them to have someone to care about and be vulnerable with. If Blade doesn't have family or friends or a team in the new movie, I think it would be nice for him to have a girlfriend. Now, don't get me wrong, the Blade series isn't the only vampire media to take on race. The most famous black vampire is Blackula, a film which came out the year before Blade's comic debut and is much less silly than that name would suggest. The main character is a tragic figure, African Prince Mamuwalde, trying to end the slave trade before being turned into a monster by Dracula. When he returns to 1970s LA, he finds a woman who is the reincarnation of his lost wife as he leaves a trail of bodies in his wake. He is pursued by a black Dr. Van Helsing and Dr. Gordon Thomas. I think this is a really good example of taking a classic story and adding a more diverse perspective. Like Dracula, Mamuwalde is unleashed from history to terrorize urban modernity, but he is both villain and victim, making him much more complicated than Dracula and avoiding the pitfalls of straight Dracula adaptations that try and make the audience root for him. Blackula could be read as a story about how the forgotten injustices of the past will always come to haunt the present. I would also recommend checking out the television adaptation of Interview with the Vampire. This series does a great job of changing the perspective of an older work about a white plantation owner to instead center black and queer narratives. While I have heard arguments that the inhumanity of the novel's vampires is underscored by their involvement with slavery, I find this analysis rings hollow. In my opinion, Anne Rice's writing is overly sympathetic and romantic in her view of these characters, no matter how murderous, exploitative, and selfish they are. The television show, by contrast, makes its protagonist much more sympathetic by showing how his decision to become a vampire and the violence he engages with as part of that is fueled by the racism and homophobia of 20th century Louisiana. The show debuted in 2022, and the second season is coming out in May of this year, if you need something to tide you over until the new Blade movie comes out. The new film, with Mahershala Ali, was announced back in 2019, but between the plague and the strikes, it is scheduled to come out next year. These delays have led to rumors of serious issues plaguing the production that were kickstarted by the infamous November 2023 Variety article. While the article contains some true claims regarding the issues with the studio, several others, such as the scapegoating of Marvel's director Naya DaCosta, have been debunked, and the writer has a history of doing Marvel hit pieces. The unsourced gossip about the upcoming Blade film was that it sidelined the lead for three female characters teaching life lessons. Several people who say they worked on the project disputed this, and I believe them, because this rumor sounds exactly like what the Chud and Grifter set like to make up about POC-led media. And those same people took the article's implications that black people are ruining Marvel and ran with it on their YouTube channels and podcasts. Will the new film be good? Who knows? and nobody will until 2025. But I, for one, am excited to see this character join the universe that he helped pave the way for. Until next time, stay nerdy out there, and don't try to ice skate uphill.